Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Tomorrow, the televised impeachment hearings begin, and today we're launching a project that you can take part in as part of our impeachment coverage. If the House is going to impeach President Trump, they will have to write specific articles of impeachment, right? Articles of impeachment are like grand jury indictments, sort of, that then go to the jury, in this case, the Senate, to hold a trial on. The Clinton, Nixon, and Andrew Johnson articles of impeachment all had very specific language laying out what those presidents' alleged crimes were. So if you are pro-impeachment, we're inviting you to write an article of impeachment that you think is a valid accusation. We'll take them in the coming days on social media and on our 24/7 voicemail line, which I'll give you in a minute, and then we'll discuss some of them on the air. And then we'll invite Trump defenders to call in and argue against your articles of impeachment. But that'll come later. Here's what we're inviting you to do. First, if you think President Donald Trump should be impeached, we invite you to write up one article of impeachment and call it in and read it on our voicemail or tweet it out. Again, we're inviting you to write up one article of impeachment, then call it in and read it on our voicemail. The number for that is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255. Again, 844-745-TALK. Or you can tweet it with the hashtag ArticlesIMP. Hashtag ArticlesIMP. So get to work. It's a good outlet for those of you who want Trump removed, but get specific. Make it specific enough, bad enough, and provable enough, in your opinion, to warrant removal from office. Then later, in a few weeks, we'll invite Trump defenders in the audience to craft your responses. Okay? Got it? Write your own article of impeachment, and we'll follow up on future shows. With me now, for some background that might help you do this, and also as a preview to the hearings about to start and how they might lead to specific articles of impeachment, is Princeton historian and CNN historian Julian Zelizer. Hi, Julian. So great of you to do this. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me here.
Do you think it's one good way to watch the hearings beginning tomorrow? See how the Democrats are trying to establish a fact pattern that leads to specific provable articles of impeachment?
Sure. If there's two key parts of this, one is the substance and listening to what the witnesses say and evaluating whether that meets the bar of high crimes and misdemeanors. And then think about how the Democrats are doing in pushing that narrative. They are going to face immense opposition, a campaign by Republicans to distract and smear. And so that's part of what you have to evaluate. Part is the substance and part is the politics.
Let's go through a few of the articles from past impeachments to give all our listeners who watch the hearings and anyone who might want to take up our invitation to try writing one of your own for Trump a sense of what they've contained in the past. So, for example, before Richard Nixon resigned in 1974, the House Judiciary Committee had passed three articles of impeachment. I'm going to read some lines now from Article 1. Richard M. Nixon, using the powers of his high office, engaged personally and through his close subordinates and agents in a course of conduct or plan designed to delay, impede, and obstruct the investigation of such illegal entry, meaning the Watergate break-in, so delay, impede, and obstruct the investigation of the Watergate break-in to cover up, conceal, and protect those responsible and to conceal the existence and scope of other unlawful covert activities. So we'll read more from that in a minute. But, Julian, that was a basic charge against Richard Nixon, covering up the Watergate break-in, straightforward. A good model for writing an article against Trump?
Well, yes. In some ways, Trump provides more fodder because he's done so much in public. A lot of what Nixon did was behind the scenes. What got Richard Nixon in trouble was not the break-in at the Watergate. It was everything he did after. And during the course of the hearings, We learned that hush money was provided to try to stop people from testifying. There was intimidation. And of course, he tried to get the CIA to stop the FBI from its investigation. And this became what the smoking gun was about. This became the most damaging evidence against the president. So I think it's incredibly relevant. And we'll hear not just what President Trump has done in public, but some of the efforts behind the scenes to stop this from becoming public.
So then this Article 1 against Nixon gets into specific ways that the House said Nixon committed that obstruction of justice. There are nine of them. I'll read three as examples. Withholding relevant and material evidence or information from lawfully authorized investigative officers and employees of the United States. So that sounds like it might be relevant to what we might hear this week, withholding relevant and material evidence. Then another one is endeavoring to misuse the Central Intelligence Agency, an agency of the United States. I'm wondering if Trump in this case might be charged similarly with endeavoring to misuse the State Department. And another one, making or causing to be made false or misleading public statements for the purpose of deceiving the people of the United States into believing that a thorough and complete investigation had been conducted. And Julian, let me ask you about that last one.
Right.
Because they were impeaching Richard Nixon for lying to the public. How quaint.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine at this point that that last one becomes a turning point for this president, given he has done so much of the lying and disinformation on all issues related to the investigations and others. So as the times change, the weight of different charges might change. The first one on withholding evidence, of course, there was a dramatic moment with Nixon when he tries to withhold the tapes. And that becomes the heart of this. It leads to a Supreme Court decision that says he can't do that. An executive privilege is not legitimate sometimes. And the question is there a piece of evidence that the president is withholding or trying to withhold or people to testify that reaches that same level? And the misuse of the CIA, that was the smoking gun tape. So what will be interesting if this comes out in the hearings, direct evidence that the president himself was somehow using the State Department or another agency to stop this from unfolding.
Let's keep going with Nixon for one more example. Article 3, which may be relevant as a precedent today, Nixon, quote, has failed without lawful cause or excuse to produce papers and things as directed by duly authorized subpoenas issued by the Committee on the Judiciary of the House of Representatives on April 11th, 1974, and lays out some other dates, and willfully disobeyed such subpoenas. The subpoenaed papers and things were deemed necessary by the committee in order to resolve, by direct evidence, fundamental factual questions relating to presidential direction, knowledge, or approval of actions demonstrated by other evidence to be substantial grounds for impeachment. So that sounds like
sure.
It could be written today.
Sure. There's a lot of warning signs if you're part of the administration when you look back to Nixon and read that, because the administration has been doing this on steroids since this all began. And that's why when the House said we are formally in an impeachment process as opposed to just investigating, it raised the danger level of the president invoking this kind of privilege and using executive power to go against subpoenas. So that's a very relevant article. And it would be surprised if Speaker Pelosi doesn't have her eye on that as we speak today.
Listeners, if you have a question for Princeton historian Julian Zelizer about past articles of impeachment as models for what may be coming down the pike in the next few weeks, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. All right, the Clinton impeachment. I'll read a little from Article 1 and a little from Article 3. Article 1 says Clinton has willfully corrupted and manipulated the judicial process of the United States. On August 17th, 1998, William Jefferson Clinton swore to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth before a federal grand jury of the United States. Contrary to that oath, William Jefferson Clinton willfully provided perjurious, false, and misleading testimony to the grand jury concerning one or more of the following. One, the nature and details of his relationship with a subordinate government employee. So there's the Monica Lewinsky reference, and it goes on from there. Jumping ahead to Article 3. Clinton has prevented, obstructed, and impeded the administration of justice and has to that end engaged personally and through his subordinates and agents in a course of conduct or scheme designed to delay, impede, cover up, and conceal the existence of evidence and testimony related to a federal civil rights action brought against him. That's Paula Jones, who claimed sexual harassment in a duly instituted judicial proceeding. The means used to implement this course of action or conduct or scheme included one or more of the following acts, and I'll just read number one. On or about December 17, 1997, William Jefferson Clinton corruptly encouraged a witness in a federal civil rights action brought against him to execute a sworn affidavit in that proceeding that he knew to be perjurious, false, and misleading. And Julian Zelizer, maybe that's the most serious charge in the whole Clinton case. He was suborning or soliciting perjury.
Sure. The first charge is a little different than what we have in front of us today. It was a very specific act of perjury.
He lied about sex under oath.
He lied about sex under oath. They caught him lying, and there wasn't really a way around it. Didn't mean it was impeachable. Not all crimes are, but they did go with that. And at this point, unless the Congress makes a case for treason or bribery, I'm not sure we're going to have that. The second one is incredibly relevant because we now have mountains of evidence about administration officials trying to stop this, trying to intimidate, trying to persuade, sometimes in public, sometimes through his Twitter feed. And I imagine that will be part of the case that they make. This was also relevant to the Russia investigation. So if Pelosi wants to go big, she could probably show a continuity in this kind of activity by the president.
Interestingly, in Clinton's case, there were four articles of impeachment that passed the House Judiciary Committee in 1998, but two of the four failed to pass the full House. So he was only tried in the Senate on two. Now, that was in the Speaker Newt Gingrich Republican House. Why did two of the four articles of impeachment against Clinton fail?
Well, I think it was strategic. The House was pretty partisan then, and the Republicans were certainly not more timid than they are today. But I think they had two very clear pieces of activity by the president. Whether or not you agreed with what the heart of the investigation was about, they thought that was the best chance they had to persuade Senate Republicans to do this. I think the Republicans today are even more partisan and more intense and will be more open to be sweeping in their opposition to all of this.
Any lesson there, though, for Democrats or for listeners who want to write an article of impeachment of their own in our project, looking for maximum buy-in, or is it not relevant to today?
Well, the buy-in is probably not relevant. Certainly, they want to keep the House Democrats all on board with this. So that's where very specific, very clear charges have the most political impact. And if they're going to have any chance of persuading some Republicans and maybe a few Republican senators to go along first with impeachment and then with removal, that's the kind of charge they're going to have to bring. And they're going to have to show a connection directly with the president if there's any chance a Republican will buckle.
And let's at least touch on the impeachment of President Andrew Johnson. Back then, in 1868, there were 10 articles of impeachment. Remember, there were just three against Nixon, four against Clinton. 10 articles of impeachment against President Andrew Johnson. I guess attention spans were way too long back then. But Julian, can you do Andrew Johnson impeachment 101 really briefly? Was there a central issue?
Sure. His violation of something called the Tenure of Office Act, when he gets rid of an appointee, in this case, the Secretary of War, who had been appointed by the president before him. And Congress had passed a law saying you can't do that. You needed Senate approval just as you do with confirmation. And they used that for impeachment. The problem with Johnson was much broader than that. A lot of Republicans were upset he was going against Reconstruction. Personally, he was a mess, and many people didn't like the way he governed.
The Republicans were the Civil Rights Party at that time.
Exactly. And he was backing away from much of Reconstruction. And they go after him, but they use this very technical violation, a little bit like Clinton in that respect, and that's what gives them the opening. And it gets to the Senate, and it falls short by a vote, the removal.
And just for the fun of it, and because listeners won't believe that this was once considered a possible high crime, considering what goes on today, I'm going to read my favorite Andrew Johnson article of impeachment. And I apologize for having one. People in the 21st century shouldn't really have a favorite Andrew Johnson article of impeachment, so I'm sorry. But here we go, and it's the last one, Article 10, in all its 19th century parliamentary prose. Andrew Johnson, President of the United States, unmindful of the high duties of his high office and the dignity and proprieties thereof, and of the harmony and courtesies which ought to exist and be maintained between the executive and legislative branches of the government of the United States, designing and intending to set aside the rightful authorities and powers of Congress, did attempt to bring into disgrace, ridicule, hatred, contempt, and reproach the Congress of the United States and the several branches thereof, to impair and destroy the regard and respect of all the good people of the United States for the Congress and the legislative power thereof, which all officers of the government ought inviolably to preserve and maintain, and to excite the odium and resentment of all good people of the United States against Congress and the laws by it duly and constitutionally enacted, and in pursuance of his said design and intent, openly and publicly and before diverse assemblages of citizens of the United States, convened in diverse parts thereof, to meet and receive said Andrew Johnson as the Chief Magistrate of the United States, did on the 18th day of August in the year of our Lord, 1866, and on diverse other days and at times, and they didn't even get to the verb in this sentence yet, as well as before, as afterwards, make and declare, there's the verb, make and declare with a loud voice certain intemperate, inflammatory, and scandalous harangues, and therein utter loud threats and bitter menaces, as well as against Congress, as the laws of the United States duly enacted thereby, amid the cries, jeers, and laughter of the multitudes then assembled in hearing, which are set forth in the several specifications hereinafter written, in substance and effect. Whoa. So, Mr. Historian,
yeah.
Was Andrew Johnson really impeached for criticizing members of Congress in a loud voice?
Yeah, I don't think that was what was driving the impeachment. I really think it was the battle over Reconstruction. That said, it does reflect a key moment when Congress, which was the preeminent branch of government still, is starting to lose its hold to the presidency. And that's why what you just read seems so quaint today. Like, it's hard to imagine any president, not just President Trump, being impeached for saying bad things about Congress as an institution.
Right.
That's almost the norm now.
To excite the odium. I don't even know what odium is. I guess we don't use that word anymore. To excite the odium and resentment of all good people of the United States against Congress.
But, I mean, it does get to something. The interbranch tensions are always part of what's going on with Nixon, with Clinton, and back to Johnson. Even though the Johnson article states it in very dramatic fashion, it's often when presidents go too far in asserting their power at a key moment of divided government that divided government bites. That's certainly what was part of the Nixon and Clinton impeachments.
So, listeners, now you have some models from Clinton, Nixon, and Andrew Johnson. And again, we're inviting you to write up one article of impeachment of your own. If you think Trump deserves one, then call it in and read it on our voicemail. After that, we'll invite Trump supporters to respond. The number for reading the one article of impeachment that you write is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255. Again, 844-745-TALK. Or you can tweet it with the hashtag ArticlesIMP, hashtag ArticlesIMP. Judy in Port Washington, you're on WNYC. with Princeton historian Julian Zelizer. Hi, Judy.
Hi. This is fascinating. I would like the, Mr. Zelizer's opinion. Trump seems to think that if he says a thing out in the open, China, please investigate Joe Biden, that it's not a crime, let alone impeachable. You know, what is his opinion about that?
Well, that's not true. That's a simple one, and that's just a political strategy. I do think the president think if he does things in public, it somehow neutralizes it, and enough Americans will say, well, there can't be anything wrong with that. If something is being done that's untoward, it should be done secretly. But in terms of the decision of the House, no, it doesn't matter if he does it in public or private. What matters is that the president did it at all.
By the way, my producer, Mary, always on the stick, just looked up the word odium. And Merriam-Webster defines it as the state or fact of being subjected to hatred and contempt as a result of a despicable act or blameworthy circumstance. So now you know.
President Trump might be in trouble on that one.
Rachel in Upper Greenwood Lake. You're on WNYC. Hi, Rachel.
Brian, this is very interesting. So I have a question about what happens after the impeachment. So they impeached Donald Trump, and he's still our sitting president. Like, he still is going to remain president. So what do we do then as a country and as a group of people?
Well, that's a very good question, and one we don't know how it will unfold. If he is impeached, and I think the odds are there will be articles of impeachment, and the Senate decides not to remove him, he's still the president. And unlike with President Clinton, for example, he will run for re-election. And so nothing happens. And then the question is, how does the weight of having been impeached by the House impact his standing at the ballot box, and equally important, does it somehow energize Republicans on Election Day to come out in greater numbers than they otherwise would? But that would be a new situation we're faced in because the other three didn't go through this.
I see you've written that you anticipate tomorrow will begin not with somber tone testimony like we might expect in an actual court of law, but with Republican protests against the process. What are you experiencing, or expecting, I should say, at moment zero?
Yeah, well, look, there's already a memo, I believe, that was released or leaked about the Republican strategy. I think the Republicans will attack the process from the first minute. They will filibuster to use as much of this precious hearing time as they can. And they will try to bring up other stories, such as Biden, and those kinds of arguments to change the conversation. And I do not think they will stop. Think about the Kavanaugh hearings when Lindsey Graham, Senator Graham, stepped up and took that strategy. Think of when Corey Lewandowski appeared in front of the Judiciary Committee. That's what you're going to see. Democrats should not think this is going to be a civil, reasonable debate.
Here's maybe one example from the other week, and this is pretty civil, but you see how Congresswoman Debbie Lesko, Republican, is trying to change the subject as Democrats were unveiling the document laying out impeachment hearing rules, and she comments on this document.
It still allows Chairman Schiff to instruct witnesses not to answer Republican questions. So that came out yesterday. I mean, one of the Republican members asked a question of the witness, and Mr. Schiff told the witness, don't answer that question. I mean, that's just wrong.
And then she said?
It also lets Chairman Schiff determines if Republican witnesses' requests are relevant. You know, I mean, that's not fair.
Now, I should say they have a right to demand due process. And in that case, the debate was over the rules, and Congresswoman Lesko is addressing the rules. If they start tomorrow, the Democrats do, by laying out a case for potential impeachment of the President of the United States, and then Republicans start raising rules issues to slow that down, you know, I don't know Well, it's going to be political, it's going to be theater, but they do have a right to demand due process, right? Any defense attorney in a court of law would question rules like the way she laid out what Schiff is requiring.
Sure, and any congressional minority would question the rules. This is what you do. You try to, A, legitimately be specific on what the rules of the game are, but then somewhat politically just try to tie up the conversation about that. And that's why Democrats, their struggle and their objective will be to let people hear the witnesses. And they have to avoid taking the bait of their becoming the centerpiece, meaning Democrats talking back to the Republicans.
Marvin in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with historian Julian Zelizer. Hi, Marvin.
Hi, Brian. Again, you're really one of the stalwarts of our democracy. Please keep up this wonderful work. I haven't heard anybody mention yet using the violation of the Emoluments Clause as an article of impeachment, and it would seem to be a very powerful argument and clearly a direct violation of the Constitution.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And look, Speaker Pelosi made a decision, at least until now, to focus this on the Ukraine story. It's primarily for political reasons. I agree. I think the Emoluments Clause and the fundamental conflict with this administration between the business ownings of the Trump family and the presidency, that's where he's most vulnerable. But right now, Speaker Pelosi doesn't want to go in that direction. She thinks politically that's too broad, it's too much, and it will almost overwhelm the case.
Do you think that's going to change? And we're going to talk with our next guest, Malcolm Nance, about this too. But this idea that it all should be narrowly focused on Ukraine, when if you really ask people who feel strongly against Trump, they would say, well, this is really part of a pattern that continues, the solicitation of foreign interference and the selling of U.S. security for his personal gain from the Russia investigation and then emoluments, you know, selling other things relating to the government for profit also come into it. But then Pelosi, as you say, is afraid that the public will get overwhelmed.
You can do both at once. This could be about Ukraine. It could be about what we have learned about the foreign policy decisions. But you have to understand why this president would go in that direction with foreign policy by looking at his entire record. And that's where everything from the Mueller report is incredibly relevant. And that's how you make a case. That's what they did to Nixon. The smoking gun alone was very important, but it was this entire pattern that they had unfolded of intimidation that ultimately made that tape so damning.
One more example of the way the beginning tomorrow might be full of attempted distractions. I know Lindsey Graham is in the Senate. He's not in the House, so he won't be in this tomorrow. But here's something he raised over the weekend.
I think it's impossible to go forward without knowing who the whistleblower is and giving the president a chance to cross-examine his accuser.
So whistleblower per se and guest list, witness list, which, as Congresswoman Lesko pointed out in that clip and complained about in that clip, the Democrats do have the right of refusal over.
They will. And President Trump loves origin stories. With the Mueller report, you remember it all became about the Steele dossier. And somehow to say if everything at the beginning is corrupt, all the information that flows from it is irrelevant. So that's why the whistleblower keeps coming up. It's also an act of intimidation. But I think Congressman Schiff is going to be pretty tough at pushing back. We don't really need to know who the whistleblower is anymore. Everything's been confirmed, including from things that the administration's released.
Yeah, the whistleblower is irrelevant. Yeah. The direct people, the people directly involved are the witnesses.
Exactly.
Now. Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton, a CNN political analyst and co-host of the podcast Politics and Polls. He's also got a book coming out next year. Take this as your book interview invitation live on the air.
Thank you.
The book to be called Burning Down the House, Newt Gingrich, The Fall of a Speaker and the Rise of the New Republican Party. Talk to you then, if not before.
Looking forward to it.